C3 AI software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Here's your money briefing for Wednesday, November 10th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. This week, we honor and celebrate the nation's veterans and their service in the military. But after facing some of the most intense challenges of their lives in a military setting or on the battlefield, when they return home, many face financial challenges.
The struggles of dealing with PTSD, traumatic brain injury, the medications that they're using to help cope with those, and suddenly every financial decision becomes a much bigger, much heavier weight to carry.
Coming up, we'll talk with author Frank Molinar. His upcoming book examines the personal finance challenges facing service people, veterans, and their families, and how they can apply lessons learned on the battlefield to rehabilitate their finances. That's after the break.
C3 AI software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
For many military service people, the return home can be a time for celebration, but for others it can mean dealing with a mountain of economic hardship. So what lessons from the battlefield can vets apply to their personal finances to find their footing? I'm joined by Frank Molinar. He's the author of the forthcoming book, Financial Dominance, Your Battle Plan for a Richer Life. He's trained and counseled veterans on things like spending wisely and not falling victim to insurmountable debt. Frank, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So, Frank, how widespread is this issue of financial challenges and hardship among service people and veterans?
Financial challenges among the ranks is much bigger than most of us realize. A couple recent surveys put it up at 90%. So, in other words, 9 out of 10 service members, veterans, this is their single biggest concern. Just below that would be maybe required to move every 2 years, which is pretty disruptive and a financial challenge all in its own, too.
So, Frank, you've worked very closely with service people in this area. What was your role, and what were some of the biggest missteps or pitfalls that you saw that weighed on service people's finances?
My role at one point was under a Department of Defense contract, and I was a financial trainer and a counselor. So we did the group trainings and the briefings, but we also spent time in the one-on-one. And when you get into people's individual finances, you learn a lot about their challenges. A lot of the challenges could just be complete disengagement. So frequently, what you'll find is just a little bit of a immaturity amongst the ranks where they can feel like a motorcycle, another gun, some more ammunition, or a truck. Everybody loves trucks. And those can have a higher priority than they really should have if they're trying to balance that with whether they can pay the utility bills next month and their cell phone and their other credit card charges. Credit can be a big challenge for service members. And part of the risk of that is they know where they're going to work every day. They know what they have to wear. And so if they don't have to worry about paying for those things, they can get a little bit less responsible. The tendency can be there with their finances.
So how are these challenges and the effects of these challenges unique to veterans?
They're unique to service members in several ways. You'll see this in the statistics that play out. Service members routinely have a divorce rate that's 30% higher than the civilian population. They have a rate of suicide that is 70% higher than the civilian population. And homelessness is 50% higher. So they play out multiple ways. Not that all of those are related to finances, but finance touches all of them and certainly makes them either worse, aggravating, or easier to manage if they have their monies in line. It's also not well known, JR, that the military and veteran demographic, they are a targeted audience. They're the most targeted audience for predatory scams, predatory loans. Only seniors are the only other age group that is targeted more frequently than the military. And part of that is because if a soldier or sailor falls behind, a lender can call, a collection agency can call the chain of command and get that service member in trouble. And that, if that gets out of hand, that can lead to their security clearances being in jeopardy, which can lead to their job and their livelihood in jeopardy.
Now, for a lot of Americans, they take on a lot of debt and they wind up facing a mountain of borrowing. What does that scenario look like for veterans?
It is no different. In fact, it might be worse. I haven't seen the comparables of percentage of debt for service members or veterans versus civilians, But I can tell you from personal experience, they tend to have maxed out most of their credit cards. And it's not just the credit cards, but it's these consolidation loans, because you get a few credit cards out of control, then you take a consolidation loan to bring the payment back down. And then because your credit cards are now at a zero balance, bad habits come back and raise those balances back up. And then the service member is in worse shape than when they took that consolidation loan. These loans and these habits tend to compound negatively against them. It can be pretty traumatic.
Now, can you talk a bit about the experience of service people and veterans being in the military for a certain amount of time and then returning home, and they have to acclimate themselves to the finances of their families? Have you seen that play out? And what are the challenges?
Boy, there are so many challenges that come into play when somebody is coming back from a deployment or having an extended period of time in deployment. Because one, they make more money when they're in a hostile zone, in an active combat zone. So frequently, they may be coming back with a buildup of cash. And the temptation at that point is almost always, I need a motorcycle, I need a truck, I deserve it, my life was at risk, this is how I can help deal and cope and reintegrate. And so they'll use the money irresponsibly and with some justifiable reasoning to themselves. And that just takes things to a different level of getting more difficult to unwind after that. Factor into that then the struggles of dealing with PTSD, traumatic brain injury, the medications that they're using to help cope with those. And suddenly every financial decision becomes a much bigger, much heavier weight to carry and harder to figure out how to get in front of it. Those are particularly the times when I enjoy the communications with the service members and help them try and figure out how to step back, stop the bleeding, secure the perimeter, and rebuild from there.
All right. Well, let's talk about how service people and veterans can rehabilitate their financial picture. You frame understanding the discipline associated with finances as securing the perimeter. Can you talk a little about that?
The entire book is built on a battle plan metaphor or battle plan format. And so it's intentional that the whole book is kind of integrating military vernacular. But in securing the perimeter, I reference that as probably one of the most misunderstood principles of finance. When a service member is in trouble, they've gotten too many debts, they've taken on too many loans, and they can't pay them, they make the assumption that it's the interest and the debts that are killing them. And I bring them back to the beginning of the problem, and it's not the debts, but it's the debtor. It's the decisions that you made that got you into those troubles. And in order to unwind those effectively, in order to eliminate them permanently, we need to establish a secure perimeter. In a hostile territory, they understand that security is the highest priority. What we just need to help them understand now is that living in the U.S. is financially a hostile territory. And if they can start with securing the perimeter and build themselves a strong base of operations, well, from there, they can advance against the enemy, take new positions, and never have to give them back.
Now, what are some of the key ways that you've helped veterans and service people develop a regimen to create a healthy spending plan?
It's interesting. When we talk about the spending plan, I like to refer to that as stop the bleeding. That's the first chapter. And that really is the beginning of everything. If someone is not tracking their expenses, if they don't have an idea where the money's going, we have to start there. And the interesting thing about referencing the term of stop the bleeding is the regimens that a medic would do downrange in a hostile territory, someone gets hit with some shrapnel or a bullet or what have you. The regimens that they do to stop the bleeding downrange are the same regimens we can do to stop the financial bleeding and build a sustainable spending plan. The first thing the medic does is make sure they evaluate the patient, look them over front to back, and make sure they find all the wounds. The second is to apply some treatment, which is both pressure on the wound and, if needed, bringing more blood in. In finances, those two steps are getting everything down on paper, what you're spending, what's coming in, what's going out, so you can actually see where the monies are going. Half the questions service members have about their finances tend to be answered in that little exercise. But then they apply the pressure, and that is how to get more efficient with their spending, how to look at ways of bringing in more income. The third thing that happens with a medic is the patient is conscious. It's very important for the medic to reassure them, to let them know, fight on, soldier, you're going to make it, you can beat this. And what I like to say about finances, this mission, unlike any other mission that a service member is on, this mission has to be personal. They have to take it. They are the commander of their own destiny, and they have to assume that role and that responsibility. But once they do, they become a much more engaged person with their finances, and they get to see that this is not just an idea of helping me be a little bit more comfortable, but helping me decide the life I'm trying to build instead of just getting by.
Okay, so how's the success rate? You know, this sounds like a learning curve for service people and for veterans. What have you seen in terms of successes?
Jared, the reason I put the effort in and took the time to write this book is because once I had dialed into the idea of communicating to the service member in their language, the reception to the content was off the charts wonderful. So when we helped them understand that the securing the perimeter is their highest priority and they understand they have to build up their savings, it's one thing, but then we can show them how to do it. And the success rate on that front has been astronomical. We show them four tactical wealth protocols. In the military, everything is built around acronyms. So, of course, we build this content and this guide around different acronyms. And the tactical wealth protocols are four different actions that a service member, civilian, pretty much anybody can utilize to build their savings back up and to get in that position of strength. We're talking about from $0 when they started to having 6 months of their cost of living set aside in about a year and a half. A year and a half doesn't sound like a long time, and it really isn't. And fortunately, it's not even too long for a 21-year-old new recruit or an 18-year-old new recruit to see. They can't think 5 years, 10 years down the road. Forget about them trying to think 20 years down the road. But you can get them to realize that, boy, a year and a half, you want to be stronger and more stable than you are now. This is how you get there.
All right, that's author Frank Molinar. Frank, it's been great having you with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.